It's late January 2007 at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis, the home of the NFL's Colts. Colts superstar quarterback Peyton Manning is on the field throwing warm-up tosses as he allows himself a quick glance at the crowd. His crowd. These fans have been behind him since day one in Indy. A decade ago, they sat through a season of losing to land Peyton in the draft. A few years later, the losing paid off as Peyton turned around the team. Now, the Colts are consistent winners and the fans are as loyal and loud as any fan base in the league. All athletes spew cliches about their love for their fans, but Peyton seems to really feel it. They call this loud stadium the house that Peyton built. It's a huge compliment, but it comes with huge pressure as well, especially on days like today. The Dome is packed with more than 57,000 crazed and a little nervous fans today, including Peyton's famous retired NFL quarterback father, Archie Manning, who've descended on the Dome to take in the AFC Championship game. The winner punches their ticket to the Super Bowl, a game in which Peyton has still not played. Today, though, could be his chance to take the next step in his career. To get there, though, he needs to go through the New England Patriots and his biggest rival, their quarterback, Tom Brady. Peyton can see Brady across the field right now working with his receivers. His eyes are steely. His mechanics are perfect, even in warm-ups. He's a perfectionist, and Peyton respects that. As Brady works through his warm-up routine, Peyton makes eye contact, and they meet at midfield to chat for a few brief minutes. For men so linked as rivals and so intent on burying each other, there's a surprising comfort level when they interact. Not a ton of in-jokes, but an abundance of respect and similar experiences navigating the NFL. Sports media's talking heads are salivating over this matchup. It's a dream come true, Brady versus Manning in the prime of their careers with the Super Bowl appearance on the line. Manning has earned nearly every award and accolade possible in his career to date. He's a two-time league MVP, he's been selected to seven Pro Bowls, and has been named first-team All-Pro three times. His numbers are otherworldly. He's led the league in passing twice, touchdown passes three times, and passer rating the previous 3 years. He's on pace to smash all kinds of NFL records. But all of his individual stats, they're starting to feel inconsequential to him. Only one thing matters now. We have to beat these guys, thinks Peyton. Enough is enough. There's a reason he's so driven to win. So far in their rivalry, Brady and the Pats have dominated Peyton and his Colts, and Peyton knows it. He's reminded of it every time he sees Brady and thinks about Brady's three Super Bowl rings. Rings that keep Peyton up at night and that push him every day during his off-season preparation. Recently, Peyton and the Colts broke through in their rivalry with the Pats, winning the last two games they played in New England. But as the game kicks off, Peyton knows that to shake the humiliating title of best QB to never win a Super Bowl, he has to raise his game to even higher heights. This, right here, is his best shot to date. Unfortunately, Brady isn't letting up. He's maniacal about disproving the doubters who say he's just a product of a winning system. He now has three Super Bowl rings and still hears people saying that Peyton is the actual better quarterback. It drives him crazy. That drive pays off early in the game. The Patriots are up 14-3. On the other side, Peyton is feeling the pressure, literally, as the Patriots' defense bears down on him.
And Manning's pass is intercepted. It's Asante Samuel going in untouched.
As Peyton trots to the sidelines, head down and frustrated, he knows that this pick six, in a number of ways, is symbolic of his career. He dominates the regular season, but in the playoffs, he's been prone to these kinds of big mistakes. But his rival knows what he's capable of, even when he's down. "Don't get too excited, boys," Brady says to his teammates on the sidelines. "Keep the pressure on 18, he's too good." Brady knows that no matter how many rings he has, there's one guy who he'll always be compared against, a guy relentless enough to somehow still pass him by, Peyton Manning. So, even with a huge lead, Brady knows that if there's one guy who can still beat him, it's number 18.
You're listening to an episode of a Wondery Plus exclusive series. To continue listening, join Wondery Plus and enjoy ad-free listening to over 40,000 episodes, early access to your favorite podcasts, and more. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
From Wondery, I'm Dan Rubenstein, and this is Sports Wars. The rivalry between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning has defined the modern era of the NFL, during which quarterbacks are kings and the faces of the league. The whole sport is built around their success, and these two have had the greatest reigns of the modern era. And yet, for how much of an overlap there is with their skill, dedication, and accomplishment, their origin stories, paths to glory, and the football world's belief in their eventual outcomes were strikingly different. Peyton, along with his younger brother Eli, are football royalty, the sons of Southern football legend Archie Manning. This meant that Peyton was just expected to be great since becoming a teenager. Brady, on the other hand, despite on-field success, was consistently overlooked, almost an afterthought. He was lightly recruited by major colleges and barely regarded as an NFL prospect, let alone as a signal caller with Super Bowl potential. Nobody saw his run of dominance coming, and Brady used his afterthought status as a chip to constantly push himself toward greatness. And even after cementing himself as one of the league's best, Brady still used those early career evaluations as motivation to eventually earn all-time NFL status. Meanwhile, Peyton stacked up amazing stats for incredible Colt offenses, but kept coming up short on the big playoff stage. For years, he was coined as the clear best QB to never win a ring. And a big, if not the biggest reason for the growing monkey on his back, Tom Brady. Along the way, there have been controversies, disappointments, records set, and Super Bowls on the line. The two even divided NFL fans. At the peak of their rivalry, you were either a Peyton guy or a Brady guy. There was no gray area. It was a rivalry between the two best quarterbacks in the league, two legends who knew that to be the best, they'd have to go through the other. This is episode one, Family First.
Saw it, Pay.
It's a clear fall day in New Orleans in 1979. A three-year-old Peyton Manning is trying to keep up with his older brother Cooper as they play football in the yard. They're both wearing oversized shoulder pads and helmets as they simulate a game. Their father is videotaping it all, and so is a local TV crew. This is not a normal game of two-hand touch by any backyard standards. But it is a typical day for the Big Easy's most high-profile family, the Mannings. Peyton's dad, Archie, is the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. His boys are used to him being a devoted, attentive dad at home, but they also sense that he's a big deal to almost every kid playing backyard ball in the South. Archie Super Manning was a legendary quarterback at Ole Miss. He set dozens of school passing records for the Rebels and was so good nearly every college football writer in America had penciled him in to win the Heisman Trophy in his senior year. Those dreams fell short, though, when a broken arm sidelined him for most of that season. But Archie's legend down south only grew when he played in the Gator Bowl with a cast on his broken left arm. The gutsy performance helped his pro prospects, and he went on to be selected second overall in the 1971 NFL draft by the nearby New Orleans Saints. This instantly made him a Southern icon. And now, by the late 70s, Archie's time with the Saints has been pretty rocky. They're the lovable losers of the league, known as the Aints. But this year, 1979, is different, and it looks like the Saints may actually have a decent shot at the playoffs. Archie's been bringing his sons to the team's facility on the weekends, and they love being around the game. Peyton is wide-eyed and serious around the Saints. He's locked in when he watches practice. He's entranced by the game. In the family home, Archie talks with the TV crew off camera. "Can I offer you fellas some more sweet tea?" he asks. "Y'all let me know if you need anything." The crew is taken by his grace and call him a gentleman. "I appreciate that," he says. "I'm just happy to be hanging with my boys." Hanging with his boys is important for Archie because he lost his father when he was still in college in Mississippi. More than anything in the world, he wants to be a good dad for Peyton and Cooper and maybe more kids someday. Peyton and Cooper go out for passes, and soon the reporter approaches 3-year-old Peyton for an interview.
"Peyton, who's your favorite football player, then?"
"My dad."
"Your dad's your favorite football player, too? You're going to be a football player when you grow up?"
"Mm-hmm."
When the cameras leave, Archie exhales. He just wants to hang with his boys. Winning football games is far less important to him than being a good father. Well, at least for now. But the boys are yelling, scratching, and at times Peyton is crying. They're obsessed with beating each other in these silly backyard games because dad is always going to high-five the winner first. It's January 10th, 1982, at Candlestick Park in San Francisco, the home of the 49ers. It's a brisk and breezy 43 degrees on the field, and a trip to the Super Bowl is on the line. The Niners have never been to the big game, but they're confident, and so are their fans, who are buzzing with excitement all over the Bay. 4-year-old Tom Brady is at the game with his dad, Tom Sr., and is amazed with the sights in front of him as he gazes out at the grass and electric stadium. His family has Niners season tickets, but today he's blown away by the iconic helmet and uniforms of the Dallas Cowboys. There's a 49ers player who young Tommy also locks in on. Number 16, Joe Montana. The 25-year-old Montana is in his first full season as a starter, but his play and potential has already captured the imagination of Bay Area football fans. Montana has mostly been a bench player since he was drafted in the third round. Scouts around the league didn't see him as a top prospect coming out of Notre Dame, and until this season, most Niner fans hardly knew his name. That changed this season. The Niners ripped off a 13-3 record and just beat the New York Giants in their divisional playoff game last week. Montana threw for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns to lead San Francisco to a comfortable 2-touchdown win. In the stands, the 4-year-old Brady can't keep his eyes off Montana after Tom Sr. points him out. He sees how confidently Montana walks around during warmups. He has flowing blonde hair and movie star looks. Tom Sr. tells him, "Joe is our guy. He's going to lead the Niners to the championship someday." During the game, it's hard for young Tommy to see the action on the field, so Tom Sr. puts him on his shoulders. "From that vantage point," his dad tells him, he can keep his eyes on Joe Montana, number 16. Young Tommy saw Joe on TV and recognizes his face, but it's a different deal in person. There's a certain smooth calm to Montana's play that's obvious even to a four-year-old. He moves gracefully in the pocket and throws perfectly tight spirals right on time to his receivers. He never seems to get rattled.
Montana throwing to the right side. He's got Mike Schumann, who is knocked out of bounds.
During the game, though, Dallas's stout defense confuses Montana, and he throws three interceptions. But with the clock ticking down and San Francisco needing to make up ground, the Niners' offense is driving. They're now on the Dallas 6-yard line with just 58 seconds left. Montana was known as the comeback kid during his college days at Notre Dame, but this is his first huge chance to come through in the clutch wearing a 49er uniform. It's 3rd and 3. Tom Sr. explains the gravity of the moment to Junior. It doesn't matter how he played earlier, his stats and all that. It's about getting the win however you can. Joe's gonna do it.
3rd and 3. We'll see a pickup sometime on the right side, possibly.
Montana, looking, throwing in the end zone.
Strangers are screaming and hugging each other in the crowd. Young Tommy gets picked up by his dad, and they yell together.
It's a madhouse at Candlestick with 51 seconds left.
Some people in their section say, "Look at Joe, he's giving too tall the business." Tommy can barely see what people around him are pointing toward. Down on the field, when he could be celebrating, Montana is in the face of a Cowboys defender. All-pro defensive end, Ed Too Tall Jones. Why is he yelling at that guy? Tom Jr. wants to know. He won. Shouldn't he be happy? Tom Sr. tells him, "Well, Joe's had a lot of people doubt if he's a great quarterback. That big guy actually said he didn't respect Joe earlier this week. Joe's just getting the last word in. That's what winners do." Tom Jr. then asks, "What's he saying? I can't hear." His dad tells him, "Words you aren't allowed to say. All you need to know is Joe Montana will never let his opponent disrespect him." Walking out of the stadium, the 4-year-old boy has never been happier. He can't shake what he just saw and has an epiphany only 4-year-olds can. He turns to his father and confidently proclaims, "I want to be just like Joe Montana."
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're starting off quick, baby. That's the way to come out.
It's a fall day in 1991 at Isidore Newman School, a private high school in New Orleans, and a familiar scene for the Manning family is playing out. It's TV cameras that are around, covering the South's first family of football. Archie's two oldest sons, Peyton and Cooper, are stars here now, and they're living up to the expectations set by their NFL father. Cooper Manning is a 6'4" senior wide receiver at Newman. Cooper wears his dad's famous number 18. He's an all-state wideout who's being recruited by a number of college teams in the South. His little brother Peyton is just a freshman, but he's already the team's starting QB, wearing number 14. There aren't many freshmen who start on varsity teams in the ultra-competitive world of high school football in the South. But Peyton's no ordinary freshman and already carries himself as if he's destined for greatness. As Peyton and Cooper connect on the field, their 9-year-old brother Eli plays catch with Archie. The famous father is only half watching his older boys. He's focused on the tight spirals Eli is throwing his way. The older boys are doing just fine without him nitpicking every pass. Newman has opened the season 5-0 with eyes on somehow winning the state title. It would be a huge story all over the South if Archie Manning's boys, Peyton and Cooper, could win state. And that's why a camera crew is here at the Manning's home and is doing interviews with the family. Peyton is oddly at ease doing media appearances. After all, he's done this more than the average teenager. You know, the whole Manning thing and all.
Well, I've always been a quarterback. I've always wanted to be like my dad, you know, watching old films of the Saints and Ole Miss. I always wanted to be a quarterback, so I enjoy it a lot. I'm going to try and stay with it.
Cooper is even more confident than his little brother. He embraces the camera time, but also he uses it to praise Peyton like he's already a pro.
As far as, you know, the poise and the savvy or, you know, whatever it may be to be the quarterback, I think he's got it, and I think he's going to have a heck of a high school career.
Meanwhile, Dad and his aw shucks Southern gentleman demeanor is just thrilled to be a part of it.
But I'm really just proud of the way they're handling everything. And the main thing is what a lot of people always told me about football and is to have fun. And I can really say these two guys of mine are having fun.
The two have set a number of school records this season, with the oldest Manning son becoming the first receiver in school history to go over 1,000 yards in a season. For a freshman, Peyton shows polish beyond his years as a classic pocket passer. While Archie is known to make plays both passing and running the ball, Peyton is all business. Take snap, scan field, launch ball. Football is more than just fun for the Mannings. It's the family business, and they're great businessmen who know how to beat the competition. It's a Friday night in November of 1991. Dozens of teenage football players are dressed like pros under the lights of a high school football field in Haynesville, Louisiana. 15-year-old Peyton Manning stands out among them. He's younger than most of the other guys on the field, but he's taller and looks more at home in his pads. He came through in his first big moment as a high school QB last week when he threw a late winning touchdown pass in the state playoffs. Tonight is his chance to win state with Cooper. But trailing Haynesville by 6 points with 30 seconds left, Peyton throws an interception on his opponent's 20-yard line, bringing an end to the dream that the two brothers had to win a championship together. Cooper puts his arm around his little brother. He tells him it's going to be all right. The following spring, Cooper makes his college decision and excites the Ole Miss fan base by accepting a scholarship to play for Archie's Rebels and wear number 81, the inverted digits Archie wore while starring in Oxford. But before his freshman season, everything changes for the star receiver. Cooper notices numbness and atrophy in his right arm. Archie takes Cooper to the Mayo Clinic for extensive testing, and then doctors determine that he has spinal stenosis, a serious nerve issue. His football career, which seemed to be just getting started, is already over. Devastated emotionally and broken physically, Cooper sits down to write a letter to Peyton. It reads, in part, "I would like to live my dream of playing football through you. Although I can't play anymore, I know I can still get the same feeling out of watching my little brother do what he does best. I love you, Peyton, and only great things lay ahead of you." When Peyton reads the letter for the first time, he gulps, sheds a few tears, but gathers himself, knowing that he never wants to let his brother down. Peyton then writes a handwritten letter back to Cooper. "What I'd do to have you back again as a receiver, I don't know. But this is all a part of growing up. I'll be seeing you plenty, I know, but things will be different." Archie tries to take some of the weight off of Peyton's shoulders. But now, Peyton feels a heavy responsibility. He feels like he has to carry the family's famous football name. Alone. It's the spring of 1995. Tom Brady is a senior at Junipero Serra High School. And he's the star of the team. The baseball team. Brady is taking massive cuts at fastballs in a batting cage, but his thoughts are elsewhere as he mindlessly smacks balls back at the pitcher. He's making his college decision in the next week, and he's having a hard time figuring out his future. He's a great catcher with a good arm and a big left-handed bat in baseball, but he loves football and can't shake the sight of himself as a college quarterback. Brady is definitely a late bloomer of a high school quarterback. He started seeing more interest from college programs during his senior year, later than most top-level recruits. He's good, very good, but by no means is there a blue-chip, all-time buzz surrounding his recruitment. In fact, some of the folks around town think he has a better chance to play pro baseball than football. But he has his heart set on playing quarterback, and that hasn't changed since he saw Montana gut the Cowboys as a four-year-old. The University of Illinois was strongly pursuing Brady, as was nearby Cal, but those programs and their mediocre history didn't feel up to his standards. Another in-state school, USC, was intriguing to the Brady family, but the Trojans didn't see a fit in Sarah's quarterback. A blue blood program much farther away had also expressed interest, though. The University of Michigan. The school with the biggest stadium in North America and a rich tradition as the winningest program in the history of college football. That got Brady's attention. When Tom Brady visited Michigan in the winter of 1995, he fell in love with the campus and the city of Ann Arbor. But his dad had concerns, and that's what he's thinking about right now as he robotically is smashing baseball after baseball. Tom Sr. was quick to point out that Michigan already has a number of quarterbacks, and there's a good possibility that Tom won't play right away. Maybe other schools would offer a faster path to success. Brady is steadfast. His heart tells him that he should go to Michigan, embrace the challenges of the big national stage, and win the damn starting job. In his high school yearbook, his senior quote is, "If you want to play with the big boys, you've got to learn to play in the tall grass." A few weeks before showing up in Ann Arbor, Brady is drafted by baseball's Montreal Expos in the 18th round of the Major League Baseball draft. It presents a slight temptation to rethink his choice of football over baseball, but he's made up his mind. He heads to Ann Arbor to play quarterback for the Maize and Blue, if he can just win the starting job. It's a fall day in 1996. Tom Brady is in his second year at Michigan. Brady's sitting outside the office of Lloyd Carr, Michigan's head coach. Brady is frustrated and thinks, how am I ever going to get on the field? Last season, the young quarterback took a redshirt year, so he was relegated to only practicing with the team while getting acclimated to Ann Arbor and college life. It meant no game time, though, meaning he's eligible to play four more seasons in college. He just isn't sure when, if ever, he'll get the chance. As the third-string quarterback, Brady is behind two guys that coaches love, including Brian Griese, future NFL quarterback and son of a beloved retired NFL QB. Standing outside the coach's offices, a future at Michigan seems bleak to Brady. He enters Carr's office door. He cuts to the chase and tells Carr, "Coach, I think I'm going to transfer." Carr responds, "Why's that?" Brady plainly tells him, "I don't think I'm ever going to play here, kind of because I don't think I'm getting a fair shot." Carr takes a moment and responds, "I'll let you transfer, but I think it'll be the biggest mistake you'll ever make." The mantra of Michigan's football program is simple. Those who stay will be champions. Legendary former head coach Bo Schembechler coined the phrase as a rookie head coach when countless players couldn't handle his off-season training program. If they could stick it out, he told them, they'd win. Brady considers the same. He knows he's facing the biggest decision of his life. So he takes Carr's advice to sleep on it and meet with him in the morning. Brady trudges back to his room and sits alone, weighing the pros and cons. He asks himself, what if I never start a game and never get to prove myself? He turns on music, paces the room, spins a football, trying to make up his mind. Dad was right, he thinks. They've got too many QBs here. This was a mistake. As he looks for more ways to distract himself, he sees his high school yearbook on a shelf. He flips to his page and sees his senior quote, "You've got to learn to play in the tall grass." He chuckles at the cliche, but it does the trick. His mind is made. The next day, Brady marches into his coach's office. His eyes are steely, his voice intense. He leans in close to his coach and says, "I've decided I'm going to stay at Michigan, and I'm going to prove to you I'm a great quarterback." It's a year later on a brisk fall day in East Lansing, Michigan, October 25th, 1997. Number 5 Michigan is visiting its bitter in-state rival, the 15th-ranked Michigan State Spartans, coached by a young defensive wizard named Nick Saban. The Wolverines are 6-0 and poised to have a great year. Tom Brady hasn't seen the field yet, but he's stayed ready, and he feels the butterflies as he takes warm-up tosses on the sidelines. Brady's eyes are on every play. He's focused as he watches his team protect a 13-7 lead in the third quarter.
And a leaping interception by Woodson, who got a foot down somehow inbounds.
Brady and his teammates are hugging and high-fiving. How did he do that? That dude is going to take us to the championship, Brady tells his teammates. His teammate, cornerback Charles Woodson, is the unquestioned leader of the Wolverines, and he does it all. He shuts down receivers on defense, plays receiver on offense, returns kicks, and brings a winner's swagger to Michigan. This amazing interception is the big highlight as U of M takes down Sparty. Now, Tom Brady's team has a national championship set in its sights. It's shaping up as one of the best seasons in school history, but it isn't clear yet if Brady himself will at all be able to contribute to the team on the field. It's December 14th, 1997, at the Downtown Athletic Club in New York City. Peyton Manning is there with Charles Woodson, Washington State quarterback Ryan Leaf, and Marshall wide receiver Randy Moss. They're the four finalists for the Heisman Trophy. Peyton has been dreaming about moments like this his entire life. He's earned his way here, displaying an NFL-like understanding of football and quarterbacking while still in college. He was the top high school quarterback in the country and a four-year starter at Tennessee. Last year around this time, Peyton thought about turning pro after his junior season, knowing he'd be a high draft pick. But he wanted to spend another year in Knoxville, leading the band, playing in front of 100,000-plus at Neyland Stadium, and getting better against tough defenses in the South, and trying to do right by his brother Cooper and his famous family. Now, he's just wrapped up a terrific senior season, setting dozens of school and conference records, but failed to beat arch-rival Florida even once during his career, giving college fans reason to believe that Peyton Manning couldn't get over the hump and win the big one. Tonight looks like it could be another example. It's almost impossible to argue with what Charles Woodson did this year in so many roles. Also, his team finished the season undefeated, and as the wins piled up against big-name programs like Penn State and Ohio State, Woodson's chances of winning the sport's most coveted trophy have been rising. He'd be the first mainly defensive player to ever win college football's biggest prize. For most, the conversation has been between Woodson and Tennessee's poster boy QB, Peyton Manning. Most still expect Peyton to be crowned with the Heisman, especially given the history of the award and offensive players, but the voters had other ideas.
To the most outstanding collegiate football player in the United States, 1997. And the winner, from Michigan, Charles Woodson.
As Woodson accepts the trophy and gives his speech, Peyton looks on graciously. But Tennessee fans are stunned. How could Peyton lose the Heisman to a defensive guy? Peyton knows that he's just months from earning NFL riches as one of the top two picks in the draft. He graciously gives some interviews, but a pattern is emerging. Despite all of his accolades and talent, it seems he doesn't win in the biggest moments. It happened in high school 3 different years. It happened all 4 years at Tennessee against Florida. And now he fails to win the Heisman that appeared to be his for the taking. And it raises a question that will follow him throughout his career, one that will drive him as he goes head-to-head with Tom Brady and the Patriots. That question: will Peyton Manning ever deliver when everything is on the line? In our next episode, Peyton Manning convinces the Indianapolis Colts to take him first overall in the NFL draft. And in Ann Arbor, Tom Brady has to fight for every snap at Michigan and almost doesn't even get drafted. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Sports Wars. If you did, you can subscribe to our series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening to this right now. It's real easy just to hit the subscribe button. It's great. You'll love it. If you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast. You'll find the episode notes and some offers from our sponsors. By supporting our sponsors, you help us offer you the show for free. If you like what you've heard, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe. I know you've got great friends, you've got great taste, they're going to love the show. Come on, you know it. Another way to support us is to answer a short survey at wondery.com/survey and tell us what Sports Wars stories you'd like to hear. And a quick note about the conversations you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. And we use many sources for our stories, including the books Brady vs. Manning, Belichick and Brady, The Mannings, and Belichick. We also source numerous documentaries and video pieces from NFL Films, articles from the New York Times, ESPN.com, Sports Illustrated, and more. I'm your host, Dan Rubenstein. I also co-host the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast, with 3 episodes dropping each week during the season and episodes each week during the offseason. It's a good show. Subscribe to that one, too. Trust me. Scott Turkin wrote this story. Edited by Gabe Riven. Produced by Yaron Descalo and Gabe Goodwin. Sound design by Jason Freeman. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.